After a chaotic weekend, President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure deal appears to be back on. But now there's a new hurdle, this time from progressives in Biden's own party who say they may not support the plan if a second bill with more liberal priorities doesn't pass at the same time. So, week in Washington, we'll talk about the Biden administration's struggle to keep Democrats on board with infrastructure and more. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the narrower bipartisan infrastructure deal pass on its own? Or do you think Democrats should hold out to try to get a second bill with things like universal preschool and climate change policies passed at roughly the same time? What questions do you have next about what comes next on infrastructure? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. Ginger, welcome back. Well, Ginger, before we get to some of our planned topics, so we learned today that former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld has passed away at age 88. Can you talk some about Rumsfeld's role in Washington and reactions you're hearing so far?
I mean, Donald Rumsfeld is probably going to be best known for his role as former President George W. Bush's Secretary of Defense, during which he was the face of the administration's insistence that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and that the U.S. needed to launch an attack on them to prevent them from being used. Considered the architect of the Iraq war. But Rumsfeld worked in public service for decades. He had served previously as the Secretary of Defense. He was a Republican power broker and really also a mentor to some Republicans as they were coming up through the ranks in government, in the party, and was really beloved, even if sort of the public perception of him was so closely tied to Iraq. Many others felt differently about him. And I think we're going to hear and are hearing in the early moments after the announcement by his family that he has died, those type of remembrances of him.
Well, I mentioned infrastructure, Ginger, the deal on between the president and a bipartisan group of senators then looked shaky and now on again. Can you give us some of the back and forth from the last week or so on this?
Yeah, so we have this big deal that was struck by the president and Republicans, this infrastructure deal. But you're right, it has been shaky. We have heard a lot of questions about whether or not the Democrats are even going to be on board with this. There's been some pushback we heard today from Chris Murphy suggesting that if Democrats couldn't put everything they wanted into the big bill, that they wouldn't vote for the smaller bipartisan agreement. So there's a lot of work left to be done by the president, by Democratic leaders on getting this this done.
Let's focus in on this sort of two-track deal, Ginger, because it gets a little confusing. On the one hand, if I have this right, there's this bipartisan agreement, at least among some senators, saying, yes, this narrow thing on what we usually have called infrastructure in the past, the roads, bridges, that sort of thing. Then there's this and hopes that they could pass that in the normal way in the Senate, and then a Democratic supported bill with more progressive priorities that would have to pass. It wouldn't get any Republican support. It would have to pass through that reconciliation process where the Democrats could pass it if they could get all 50 senators, Democratic senators on board. Did I sort that out about right?
Yes, you did. That's a pretty concise summary of what Congress is looking to do. Now, look, we should start by saying getting anything through Congress is always difficult. And so now we're talking about getting two separate pieces of legislation. That's two votes. That's two different competing interests. It's a lot more than just one piece of legislation. And so you're right. This is this bipartisan agreement. And this is going to go via what we would call, or what lawmakers would call, regular order. So it's going to have to get 60 votes from Republicans to clear a filibuster, and it's going to have to pass both chambers. And then there's this reconciliation. And this is kind of like a parliamentary hat trick, right? You sort of a sleight of hand to get around the filibuster. And so it only needs Democratic votes. And this isn't unprecedented. Democrats have used this before, and Republicans used it to put through their tax breaks in 2017. So there's a precedent for this. And what we're seeing now is starting to be an inter-democratic disagreement where they can't decide just how much money they should spend and just how much taxes they should raise. And they're starting to show signs that some of them could try to cause some problems on both fronts if they don't get what they want on that bill.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital, looking at some of the top stories in the nation's capital right now. Infrastructure, maybe a deal finally in the works. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. If you have thoughts on what you want to see come out of this, if you have questions about what's going on, give a call or email ideas@WPR.org. Want to give a listen, Ginger, to White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, asked about this dispute amongst Democrats over linking the two bills today. Here's what she had to say.
We think the American people are most focused on what this is going to do for them and less on the process. It's up to leaders in Congress to move this forward. The president looks forward to signing both pieces of legislation into law.
But Ginger, if the process doesn't work, these bills aren't going to do anything for people, right? I mean, the process has to go through to make these things pass.
That's right. You have to sort of get through some of these things. And you know, this is the sausage making that Washington talks so much about. And I think for some of your listeners, I mean, they don't care how Congress gets it done. They don't really care if it's a reconciliation filibuster skirting bill or it's one bill or two bills. They care if the bridge in their community gets rebuilt. They care if they have broadband internet. I mean, we talk about broadband, but listeners in Wisconsin, that's a real thing, parts of the state where you can't get broadband internet. And that's a provision that's being discussed in this. So, you know, there's a lot of back and forth in Washington, but at the end of the day, it's about what shovel gets put in the ground and whether or not that happens.
Ginger, can you tell us a little more about the shovels in the bipartisan one now, the normal order plan? How many shovels are we talking about? How much money? What are the key priorities there?
Yeah, we're talking about a rather large bill. So in the bipartisan agreement that was struck between the president, as you said, and some senators, in that case, we're talking about what they're calling physical infrastructure. So this is roads, bridges. It's got some climate pieces, you know, pieces that are considered climate, particularly coastal issues that would address some erosion issues along the coast, but not the energy or the electric vehicles that some Democrats wanted. It's got some money for broadband, which is a bipartisan agreement. And all in all, it's a $579 billion package and a package that Democrats are hoping, or Republicans are hoping, they can get some buy-on from some of their other members, because it is those things that they traditionally have been very popular.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Randy is with us in Preston, Minnesota. Randy, hi.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm confused. Biden, it seems like everything that Biden does, the Democrats say he's just exceeding our expectations, and the Republicans seem to think he's made a deal with Beelzebub, and it seems like he has turned back every single campaign promise that he made. He was going to do single payer. He was going to do $15, first off, out of the gate, $15 an hour, and cancel student debt, or he was going to reduce it, not cancel it, but $50,000 a student. Free college, free, well, wait a minute, not really college, but technical college. We can't go the 4 years.
I gotcha, Randy. So Randy's seeing the president, Ginger, turning away from some of his campaign promises. I don't remember single payer as a Biden promise, though. Some of the others do ring a bell, though.
You know, the other thing, it's one of those things where what were his campaign promises? He didn't promise single payer. He didn't promise to cancel student debt. In fact, he tried to do everything he could to not even come close to promising getting rid of student debt. And he's sort of also now trying to delay and delay. My coworker, Lauren Egan, did a great story a couple weeks ago about how the White House said they were going to have a memo on whether or not he even could cancel student debt in April. And here we are looking at July tomorrow, and we still haven't gotten that memo. And I think it's interesting. When I think about Biden's biggest promises on the campaign trail, I think about COVID and I think about infrastructure. His whole campaign slogan was Build Back Better, and it was meant to be COVID focused and to be infrastructure focused. And I saw a joke the other day when they were announcing this infrastructure deal. They you know, did so maskless in a group outside the White House that he had sort of delivered on two of his promises as symbolized there. But I do think that he is still trying to plow through those agenda items. He hasn't yet really been confronted with something unexpected that he has to redirect his attention. And those other things I think we're going to see him try to address in a way that he can. And I think he is constantly aware, perpetually aware of the national dynamic and whether or not this is viewed as partisan versus not partisan. And for that reason, I think things like student loans are something that he knows is very popular with his base, but he wants to make sure he doesn't do it in a way that really upsets Republicans.
Thanks for the call, Randy. We'll go to Lee now in Milwaukee. Lee, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to mention, Lee?
I just wanted to say that I think that passing the bipartisan version should definitely happen. I think we should absolutely shoot for these more pie in the sky ideas, these more social ideas that these other Democrats want. But right now, our roads are literally crumbling out from underneath our feet, and anything is better than what we got. We have to make progress in any way. Take it like a marathon and not a sprint, you know?
Lee, thanks a lot for the call. Ginger, is there talk in Congress along those lines? Take what we can get now and maybe work on that other stuff later?
I mean, that's just a really complicated puzzle that House Democrats are having to put together, right? You have to get enough votes. And there are some very liberal people in Congress who are saying that if they only do a piece of it, they'll be failing, right? That it's not enough and that they would rather blow the whole thing up than get just a small piece. I'm not sure that's a position that's going to last very long. It feels like a negotiating position, like they're just trying to get more through it, and that if push came to shove and they could only do the smaller package, that ultimately they probably would. And it's a little bit kind of also like Democrats to sort of go ahead and take what they can get. And Republicans shut the government down in 2013 to try to repeal Obamacare. It's not in Democrats' nature to sort of do that kind of thing. And I think for that reason, it is a good chance we see something get done, that we see some type of progress. And let's also be clear, funding infrastructure used to be such a bipartisan thing that it would not have been something we would have considered hard or difficult. So this is not exactly the highest bar.
Lee, thanks for that call. We're talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital. She's with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, what do you want to see from a January 6th commission? What do you want to see it investigate? The House passed, put that commission into practice, not what they had tried for initially. What do you want to see happen there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our look at some of the top stories in national politics now with Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital. You can join in at 800-642-1234. The U.S. House has voted this afternoon to create a select committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol. What do you think about that? Call it at 800-642-1234. What, if anything, do you think needs to be investigated? Do you wish we had had the 9/11 investigation style committee that was originally proposed? 800-642-1234 is the number. Ginger, what do we got? What is this committee looking like now?
So the House voted just a few moments ago to approve this committee. And what we're going to find out sometime soon, in the next hours or days, is who's going to be in charge of this committee and who is going to be on this committee. So it's 13 House members, won't include any senators. And the way that the legislation that authorizes it is written is that Nancy Pelosi will choose the 13 members, or she will name the 13 members, five of who will be named in consultation with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. And that's a little bit of an interesting language because she can consult, but she doesn't have to necessarily do what McCarthy tells her. So if McCarthy comes back and says he wants all members who have insisted that there was no riot at all, which a couple of them have, she cannot include them. And then Pelosi has also said that she's considering, of the 8 members that are entirely up to her discretion, naming a Republican in order to sort of get the balance of that committee a little bit closer to parity. It would be 7 to 6 a Democrat-Republican split if Pelosi did that. And key here, there were 2 Republicans who voted for this committee, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois and Liz Cheney of Wyoming, who have been very critical of Donald Trump, who voted to impeach him. So they weren't surprising. But now those are considered the 2 Republicans that we might see Pelosi add to this committee.
What do we know about what this commission, however it ends up being constituted, is intended to look into? What particulars?
So they're pretty limited to just January the 6th. So they can look into what led up to it and what happened on that day. That had been sort of when they were talking about doing a commission instead of a committee, that had been sort of a big point of contention. Republicans wanted a lot more covered. They wanted general political unrest to be included, and Democrats told them no. And there was some push by Democrats as well to make this basically a Trump investigation. And it seems that that is not going to be permitted either. But this will look a lot into Trump, into Trump's allies, into his organization, into what role they were playing in bringing people, attracting people to Washington for this event, and then telling people to go to the Capitol. And I think that that's going to be a pervasive subject in here because it is such a key part of this debate and discussion and what happened. And then also, you know, how did they get in the building? You know, lots of us, including myself, who was there that day, all thought this is the safest building in the world. No one's going to get inside. We were wrong. And so doing some deeper explanations and understandings of some of the mechanics of what happened that day.
Let's bring on a caller now. Bill is with us in Superior. Bill, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. The only thing I got to say about this January 6th committee is, no, let's just be done with it. The horse, we beat the dead horse. Pelosi's just coming up with more stuff to keep ragging on Trump, even though he's not in office anymore. I don't know how many more times they're going to try to impeach Trump, 3, 4, 5 more times, and just keep vilifying the Republican Party. It wasn't the Republican Party's fault that, a rogue bunch of people went in there. We got better things to do.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. And Ginger, are we hearing that from some Republicans in the House who voted against this?
I mean, I think we're hearing from Republicans that they think that this is just going to be partisan. The sort of saying the quiet part out loud, too, which is that they think any investigation that stretches into next year politically will be bad for them ahead of the midterm elections. And I do think that there's a risk for Democrats. I mean, we can look at the House Republicans' efforts to investigate Benghazi. It was attack on a U.S. consulate. Americans, including the ambassador, were killed. It was a terrible event. Republicans' efforts to try to make this about Hillary Clinton dragged it out in a way with tons of hearings and investigations that stopped being about actual security failings and became very partisan and political and accomplished very little in trying to make our embassies safer, our consulates safer. Democrats know that that is something that they risk, that if they as the caller said, beat the dead horse, that there could be a political risk for them. But they think that there are still elements of this. There has not been sort of a 30,000, but a holistic look at what happened and who was involved and the roles that people played, and that they can do that without a political risk. But be unclear that, especially for voters who care more about what the kitchen table issues, as they like to say, that there could risk sort of turning some of them off.
Bill, thanks for that call. Ginger, I want to take a quick look before we run out of time at police reform legislation. We've been seeing negotiations going on in Congress over this. Where is that right now?
you know, there looks to be some progress happening on this issue. They are talking, they have been talking, but as we had a great story from Leanne Caldwell this week on NBCNews.com, some of those, like, rosy depictions of progress may be not quite showing as clearly how much of a problem behind closed doors there is. We're seeing feuding between sheriffs and police groups, and every time we think that they've come to an agreement on qualified immunity, it turns out that maybe they don't have an agreement on qualified immunity. And for those of you who don't know what qualified immunity is, because it is a very jargony term, it's a legal doctrine, so it's not a law, but it's something that the courts have established that says that police, when they actions taken while on duty, have a higher bar in order for them to be sued if something bad happens. So if they think that they're acting within the law, there's a certain amount of protections. Now, they don't have blanket protections. It's not like you can't sue a police officer for something he's done on duty, but it's much, much harder. And Democrats want to get rid of that, and Republicans think it's kind of important because there could be lots of things that an officer must do in the course of their work that is the doing the best they can to protect the public. And if they don't have some protection, if they're going to be sued, they think that they risk losing a lot of officers that way. So it is a really sort of in the weeds fight, but it is something that I if they could come to some agreement, then I think they will have a police reform bill before the year is over.
Ginger, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. She was with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in the nation's capital.